We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, over there, beautiful Chicago, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you? The birds are shining, or sun is shining, the birds are chirping.
Well, I guess maybe the birds are shining because the sun is shining upon them. So yeah. Technically you're correct. I'm all right, Ty. I was unable to watch a lot of football yesterday, but caught up this morning and was up very bright and early. I have a nitrogen-infused cold brew coursing through my veins.
Okay.
So technically, I hit the Nas button, Ty.
The Nas button, a little fast and furious action. I did.
The caffeinated Nas button. You're supposed to pour it straight down to activate the Nas. And I said to myself, Dan, this is what you need.
That
so I watched everything.
That can't be real.
It is. It is. Absolutely. Look it up. It's from Trader Joe's, nitrogen infused cold brew.
To pour it straight down?
You pour it straight down. And so I guess the air pocket that develops, I don't know. Ty, come on. I got a B minus in physics. Tops.
All right.
But I watched everything. And I have a retroactive Saturday nickname for you. You can say, no, that's stupid, or yes, Dan, that even tops Spirit Airlines Saturday. But I am ready to roll with a review of Skin of Your Teeth Saturday. Huh?
It's not bad. I do like
it. Okay, I'll take it. I'm not on a lot of sleep.
I do like it. Yes, of course, a big game that I'm just brimming to speak of momentarily here. Thank you for downloading the show, for supporting us. I am Ty. He is Dan. We are the Solid Verbal. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. We do 3 shows a week. We're also out there on social media. And if you want to check out all the bonus content or get a video feed of this very episode that we are recording
now. Yeah, I would say our current level of video quality is peaking right now. It's so good.
It's
knock
good.
On wood. It's we've gotten that nice, soft, creamy light on us. We're in stunning 1080p. It's cinematic. I don't know why this show needs to be beautifully
it
lit
does
and
not.
Cinematic.
It really doesn't.
But it is. If you're not going to do something the right way, don't do it.
If you want more on that, going out to verballers.com. And speaking of our great Verballerhood, we're going to play your reverbs here momentarily and get your real-time reaction to what we saw happen in Week 10. Dan, Skin of Your Teeth Saturday. It started off as a Spirit Airlines Saturday.
Yes.
I obviously am still riding the high from the Notre Dame overtime win. And,
yeah,
you know, that to me was, well, I've got a lot to say on that, obviously, as a longtime Notre Dame fan and a veteran of a few Clemson games. I have many thoughts that I'm gonna share here. But any general high-level takeaways outside of the Notre Dame-Clemson game, which we'll address on the other side of the reverbs.
Sure. Cocktail Party was wild. The twists and turns therein was incredible. The Pac-12 coming back, not as heartily as I guess we would have liked with the cancellation of a couple games.
The Pac-8, right?
The Pac-8, which is what it was, I believe, before the Arizona schools joined in the early 80s. So a throwback of sorts. I had a fantastic time with the Friday night games. I did not watch them Friday night because I'm an old, Ty. I am an old. But in terms of reinforcing things that either one of us, I would say, thought we thought in terms of, well, this team we thought was going to be good definitely isn't, or this team that seems good now for sure seems good. You know, two examples anyway, BYU and Florida.
Right.
I thought
right.
it was a fantastic weekend in terms of understanding teams in a way that we haven't before and in a way that I never really figured we fully would because of the strangeness of 2020. But across the country, it was a reinforcement of sorts for Saturday thoughts. So I'm very excited to weigh in on a ton. And I'll say this right now. I still say Michigan State, the second best team of the Big Ten.
No. Indiana, baby. Indiana, getting it done.
Ty, I officially would like to retract that projection. Yeah.
Indiana might win the Big Ten at this rate. All right. Well, yeah. 408-VERBAL-1 is the phone number. 408-837-2251. We open up the reverb line every Saturday. Our boy Ryan cuts them up, puts them together into a super cut of all of your best hits. Hear those voice messages. Have a listen.
Hi, Ty. Hi, Dan. Ken from Maryland. I've been watching football since matching on Wednesday night, a little bit of Thursday action, some Friday. Now the Pac-12 was back. Been watching so much, I can't find my wife. I think she entered the transfer portal.
Hey, Ty and Dan. It's Brittany from Fayetteville.
Dan, Ty, this is Ray calling from...
Hey, guys. It's Jacob, the lonely UCLA fan in Alabama country.
Dan, Ty, it's Brendan from New Orleans.
Dan, Ty, this is Michael calling from Boulder, Colorado.
Dan, Ty, this is Tanner in Raleigh. This weekend, I watched my BYU Cougars beat up on the Boise State Broncos. Hot take, Boise is not an actual state.
Dan, Ty, this is Colton from Ames, Iowa. That was the definition of winning a clunker. Roll clones. First place Iowa State Cyclones. Let's go.
Justin Fuente should be driven to the nearest airport and fired on the tarmac.
I'm just so glad that USC made the push to play again so they could teach the nation the most important lesson of all. You gotta win your clunkers. Fight on.
Sun Devils, exactly what did you do? You had the lead and you blew it. He pulled an Atlanta Falcons on everybody. Stop it.
I don't know if Clay Helton is the luckiest bad coach in America or the worst lucky coach in America.
Hi, it's Jamie from Gainesville, Florida. I've got a message that I sent to Kirby Smart, but I sent it on a wheel route, so I'm not sure he's going to get it.
Dan, Ty, San Jose State just beat San Diego State. The Spartans are 3-0 for the first time in forever. It's time to rank the Spartans. Let's go. Spartan up. SJSU.
The word of the day is schadenfreude. Watched Indiana take it to that team up north.
We found out on Saturday, path to the White House, went through Pennsylvania after big wins by the Hoosiers and the Irish. Does the path to the college football playoffs go through Indiana?
You know, the great state of Nevada may not be able to count ballots as fast as everybody wants, but the Nevada Wolfpack football team can sure score some points, and it's 3-0. Go Wolfpack.
I just finished a beer, but upon further review, I didn't actually finish it. But upon further review, I did finish it. Go Irish.
Ian Book, more like Ian Library. Go Irish.
Hey, Ty, is an Aggie. After the 92-93 Cotton Bowls, I never thought I'd pull for the Irish. But Clemson's entered that Alabama territory where I pull for them every weekend. Go Irish!
When your team doesn't get a sack until the last three plays of the game, go Irish! Go Irish! Woo!
I'd like to point out, last time Notre Dame beat the number one team was when they beat Florida State in 1993. Went on the road the following week and lost to Boston College. And who does Notre Dame play next week? Boston College on the road. I can enjoy this now while I can.
As an ACC fan,
I've always said that I'll stop hating Notre Dame as soon as they grow up and join a conference. As a Clemson fan, I think I may need to rethink that strategy.
It's been a very long time, but tonight I can actually say that the Razorbacks won one of their clunkers. Go Hogs.
I think Sam Pittman should get Coach of the Year, baby. I know Hugh Freeze is making noise with Liberty, but I think it's Sam Pittman all the way. We beat those Bulls tonight. Go Hogs, woo pig suey.
I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Tell the world that Bill O'Brien come back to Happy Valley.
DeSean Clifford have a little bit of Christian Hackenberg in him.
So Halloween is over, and I think we need to introduce the concept of Smash Your Gourd Saturday.
All right, Dan, there you go. The fire, the passion, a lot to discuss. In week 10, we appreciate everybody dialing in. As always, it's the highlight of these Sunday recordings that we do. So thank you so much for playing along. We got to start with Notre Dame and Clemson, Dan. We got to start with Notre Dame and Clemson. It was the big game of the evening.
Let's rush that digital audio field.
Yeah, let's do it. 47 to 40 is your final score. Went to double overtime, a good football game. The whole way through, one of the best that we've seen so far this year. Notre Dame led most of the way. If you didn't see it, at one point, 23 to 10 in, I think, the third quarter.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it was. 23 to 10.
Mid-game. Yeah.
At one point, Clemson comes back to tie it at 26. And eventually, they end up taking the lead with about 3 minutes left. Totally predictable that this would happen. I was watching with Mama H. Thankfully, the pup was asleep and didn't seem to be too agitated by the sudden loud noises I was belting out as like Ben Skowronek would drop a wide open pass or anything like that.
But 23-10 in the second quarter for what?
Second quarter. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, it seems like Notre Dame gets one final bite at the apple. It doesn't work out. They turn it over on downs. There's an odd series where
kept their timeouts though.
Kept their timeouts and then
really,
Clemson.
Nice job there.
Clemson has a really short field to work with. They essentially go three and out. Notre Dame's able to conserve two of those timeouts. They get the ball back, their own 9 yard line, and Ian Book leads them on a 91 yard scoring drive, capped off by a long touchdown pass to Avery Davis. And then eventually they get in the end zone to tie the ball game up at 33 to send it to overtime. So let's talk about this. Obviously, Notre Dame ends up winning the game. Fans rush the field. We'll see if they're able to play more games due to the celebratory super spreader event that was the post game.
Yeah.
However, that aside, the big story going into this football game was obviously that Trevor Lawrence was not going to play. Because of COVID protocols, he was there on the sidelines. He had his mask on. And that meant that we got to see our boy DJ.
Take the whole last name, buddy.
Uyangalale.
Nailed it. Done.
Uyangalale.
Swallow and move on. Yeah.
He gets in. He gets the start. And the question was, well, if Notre Dame wins, is there going to be an asterisk, right? Because Trevor Lawrence, the best player, blah, blah, blah. He's not going to play. To be honest with you, Dan, I'm not sure what Trevor would have given them above and beyond what they got out of DJ. Because he was superb in this football game. 439 yards. He missed a couple throws, right? But by and large, he, I think, was able to shoulder the burden of that offense particularly well, especially because Notre Dame seemingly came out there on a mission to shut down Travis Etienne.
Definitely.
Etienne doesn't run. A lot of it falls on DJ. Again, missed a few throws. Not sure it was all that big of a step down from Trevor Lawrence. The key for the Notre Dame defense was how they controlled that line of scrimmage. They shut down Travis Etienne. His longest run of the day was something like 13 yards. Otherwise, they were just content to let DJ pick him apart. Pick him apart, but it was reminiscent to me a little bit of the old Bob Diaco defenses, where you bend, but you don't break. And they gave up a few big passes, but really nothing too substantial that was going to come back to bite him in the end. So I thought it was a really good game plan from Clark Lee. The defense stepped up to the plate. And, you know, it dawned on me watching the latter half of this game that if Notre Dame or really anybody is going to beat one of these teams that we view as a top elite caliber squad like a Clemson or an Ohio State or Alabama, it's always got to be something like a 47-40. You know, like you got to get a couple turnovers.
That's been the new reality, yeah.
You got to get a couple turnovers. You got to get a couple stops. But if you're hoping for some sort of defensive slugfest, 9-6 Alabama LSU ain't walking through that door anytime soon. Like this is sort of where we're at. Notre Dame played the game, eventually got it to overtime, was able to get the W. We could talk about Ian Book and the game plan on offense and whatnot, but any thoughts based on just that matchup there, the Notre Dame defense against the Clemson offense?
Yeah, I thought, well, first of all, think about your teams. If your team is not Clemson or maybe Alabama or Ohio State, but if your team has a backup quarterback, which I imagine they do, think about what they look like as it compares to what DJ Uiagalelei looks like on the road at night against Notre Dame on network television. Night and day, file that under, must be nice. Must be nice. Second of all, you said the Notre Dame defense versus the Clemson offense. That's what you're looking for?
Yeah, yeah.
Notre Dame dominated the line of scrimmage, really on both sides of the ball, but specifically on defense they did. Second of all, one of the things I really like to look for in these big games or with teams that are improving or teams that hire a new coordinator is how often is it just a right place, right time situation? A defense might not have NFL caliber players. They might not have the most developed edge rusher or the most instinctual safety. But on that sort of bobble fumble from Travis Etienne to, it was Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. That's
correct.
Who grabbed it. Right place, right time. Give yourself the opportunity to succeed by being in the right place, right time. And that's what Notre Dame's defense, because it's not, you've mentioned it before, it's like the secondary is a list of nobodies outside of Kyle Hamilton or an unsung hero secondary. Right place, right time. Even with DJU lighting them up, those opportunities for Notre Dame came to fruition, and that's what they needed. We talked about this. It's a good defense at home against a backup quarterback, and so you are going to have spots to take advantage of. Can you? Notre Dame absolutely did. They hung around. And if we're going to transition to the other side of the ball, who is Nails? Lenny Dykstra?
Lenny Dykstra was Nails, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Philadelphia very much in the news, so let's go with Lenny Dykstra. Nails Book. Ian Book, downfield, big moments, multiple quarters, multiple high leverage moments. That's the term I'm looking for.
Sure.
In that game-tying drive at the end. Just absolutely lights out. We used to call him Ian Chapter, at least I did. Last night against Clemson, he was Ian Volumes Tie.
Yeah.
Ian. He was a set of books, not just a single tomb tome.
He was sensational.
He was really good.
He was sensational. This was the best game of his college career. Threw for over 300 yards.
And I think the fast start is important to mention, too. Kyren Williams, that's the first offensive play for Notre Dame. Notre Dame has not been a fast starting team. They came out and punched Clemson in the proverbial nose. Great to see if you're a Notre Dame fan, obviously.
To your point, this is the best game of Book's career.
Mm-hmm.
Undeniable, full stop. And he got better as the game wore on. What was interesting to me is that Tommy Rees very clearly looked at the game tape from Clemson-Boston College.
Yeah.
And we talked about it on this show. BC was just chucking it up, man. They were chucking it up. They actually had a fair amount of success doing it. Now, they weren't able to sustain for four quarters. That's why they lost. But
that's the key.
They were able to move the needle a little bit, just taking those vertical threats. And it was clear that Notre Dame was going to try the same thing. And because of that vertical threat, because Notre Dame had a little bit of success doing it, it opened up the ground attack for Kyren Williams because they had to respect potentially that over-the-top play.
Yep.
It opened up running lanes for Ian Book. And it also opened up some underneath stuff. We saw Michael Mayer getting involved, who, you know, one of maybe chief among the baby Gronks in college football at this
point. They call him Baby Gronk.
You know, like, so it was just a really sound game plan from Tommy Rees. I thought he did well. Notre Dame executed. We did have the fumble down at the goal line that you know, almost came back to bite Notre Dame, but thankfully, from their side of things anyway, it did not. This is a really high level football game. My guess is that we're going to see a rematch of this at some point in the future. Notre Dame also has a pretty notable trap spot against Boston College this coming week, which we can discuss on, our Wednesday show. But this is a huge moment for the Notre Dame football program, and particularly Brian Kelly. the monkey has been on his back for a long time. A lot of folks saying he can't win the big one. Got to do better against these top tier opponents if you actually want to gain some real national credibility.
Yeah.
And look, it's who knows what happens.
No
if
Trevor
they play
Lawrence.
Again.
No
knows
what happens. Trevor Lawrence.
Who knows what happens if they play with Trevor Lawrence? But this was.
Well, we might find out, Ty. It's likely that we will find out at this point if everything holds. What a year to join a conference. Normal year. Yeah, beat Clemson once, go to the playoff. Nice, clean, clear path. Beat Clemson twice.
Beat him twice. Yeah. In general, and then we'll move on. We'll talk about Florida, Georgia, not to belabor the Notre Dame Clemson game.
It's worth belaboring. It was an amazing game.
I expected that if Notre Dame won, it would look different and that I would come away feeling like maybe they stole one off the back of a truck. I do not have that feeling at all. That was a game that they outright won. It was a really well played effort by the Fighting Irish. They straight up beat them. Like I said, it might be a different game. It probably will be if Trevor Lawrence is out there the next time around. But at least at time of recording on, what is this, November 8th? I feel pretty good about where Notre Dame stands after that one.
It turns out on the Clemson side, by the way, weird that their line play was so thoroughly outclassed, because that's generally where they've been so strong, especially along the defensive line, in getting to the quarterback with just four guys. Like we've seen, you know, that legendary group of four from a couple of years ago. It's a different Clemson line situation. No matter how well they recruit, they just have not developed. And yes, there have been injuries and transfers and COVID stuff. All the context always applies. But strange to see a very different Clemson defensive line experience.
Staying with big matchups, this was the other big one on Saturday. It's the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It is Florida. It is Georgia. The Gators win 44-28, Dan. They were down early, actually. Georgia jumped out to a really quick 14-0 lead. They scored in their first play from scrimmage and then on their very next drive. From that point forward, though, I think it's fair to say that Florida's offense just straight up overwhelmed the Georgia defense. Kyle Trask had a full command of that offense, threw for 474 yards and four touchdowns. It's striking to watch what Dan Mullen does, because it's obviously against a really top level, elite caliber defense with the Georgia Bulldogs.
A beat up one, a beat up defense. Yeah,
for sure. And that needs to be said, but it's, if you're watching from home, if you know nothing else about defense, if you don't care to, I think it's just notable that there are so many different people and so many different things that you need to keep track of with this Florida offense. You've got guys coming out of the backfield, running over the middle, running a wheel route. You've got guys working the seam, crossing. Like, the way that he designs his passing attack has to be so difficult to freaking keep track of. And we saw it. We saw it throughout the course of the night. Clearly, Kyle Trask knows where to go with the football. He knows how to make those reads. But the play design, to me, was just really striking watching them go up against a Georgia team that I think we've been led to believe and still do believe to some extent is a really, really freaking good defense.
Yes, especially to just piggyback how well they took advantage of the running backs and mismatches out of the backfield, Florida, in that passing game. That was quite impressive. And to your point earlier about in 2020 and 2019, 2018, a big win over a big team is going to involve turnovers and scoring at least, 35 points on offense?
I think
Georgia doesn't have that ability, even against a Florida defense that actually was letting receivers behind itself. And it's my old favorite Seinfeld, anybody can take the reservation. Anybody can get open. You got to hit the open guys.
Right.
And that's the distinction. I know Stetson Bennett left with a shoulder injury, an AC sprain, and DeJuan Mathis came in. But neither one of them were able to consistently see the open dudes, hit the open dudes. And I guess credit Kirby Smart. He has tried to unearth every possible quarterback to come into the Georgia program to improve things. And the Jamie Newman opt out, JT Daniels might, I don't know what the hell is going on with him. And the Fromm Fields thing still seems to haunt the program and that decision. But Georgia just, they don't have the firepower. They don't have the manpower on offense to be a top flight team right now. And Florida to their very specific credit, even with Kyle Pitts leaving this game injured,
right.
It was just next man up. It was Kadarius Toney. It was Trevon Grimes. It was Damian Pierce. Like, they just kept finding dudes. And Kyle Trask, right now, to me, I think he's my Heisman front runner. I mean, just because Justin Fields hasn't played the schedule yet, just the number of games yet, that Kyle Trask,
wow,
right now, even in that losing effort, he did not have a down game against Texas A&M. And then to perform like he has performed now against Georgia and Ole Miss and South, whatever. I think I am most impressed by Kyle Trask's season resume just because of the incomplete nature of obviously Trevor Lawrence and his COVID status and Justin Fields being out and Sebo Flemster not getting carries against. Yeah. I just wanted to say his name.
Sebo Flemster.
I couldn't be more impressed with the fact that we came from looking at Kyle Trask's arm and saying, like, well, he's accurate and he completes passes, but it's so soft. And now it's still pretty soft and he keeps completing passes against great defenses. So Florida now in the driver's seat in the SEC East. And I can't imagine, because of that defense, that Florida is able to beat Alabama and their weaponry, but they're closer than I thought they'd be.
They're closer, I agree with you, than maybe we thought. And Kyle, like I said, Kyle Trask just very clearly has full command of this offense. And it's striking to watch where Florida was at. Last year had a good offense, had room to grow, but to see now them doing more complex things on the offensive side of the ball with his level of confidence, it's really impressive. And like you said, it is next man up. It doesn't matter how hard he throws, as long as he gets it where it needs to go. There were a lot of big plays in this game on the Florida side. They really took advantage of those chunk plays, and that was ultimately what took down Georgia here. It should be smooth sailing for the Gators until the SEC championship. We can't take anything for granted, especially in a goofy year. And maybe we shouldn't sleep on Arkansas. I don't know. The revenge of Felipe Franks, right?
But yeah, for sure.
Arkansas, Vandy, Kentucky, Tennessee, and LSU the rest of the way. Compared to what we thought at the start of the year, that feels a lot more workable now. So we'll see.
Good character performance, by the way. Going down 14-0 like that. And then just like, no, we're cool. We're going to bring our own monsoon in the second quarter. It's all good.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Pac-12 or Pac-8 was in action. We had four games between Oregon and Stanford, USC and ASU, Colorado and UCLA.
UCLA, yeah.
And Wazoo and Oregon State. Arizona and Utah, Washington and Cal were both canceled. Dan, where do you want to start in the Pac-12?
USC ASU with that 9 a.m. local kick. Was USC winning in a losing effort? That's my new operative phrase because it just seems to be so common this fall. USC really looked disjointed on offense for long stretches of this game. And, you know, the turnovers, the inability to consistently run the ball or throw the ball, whatever it was. And then slowly Keaton Slovis found his rhythm. They're able to run a little bit. They get the, you know, Drake London's just an absolute dude. And I always hesitate when there is a guy with receiver skills who is the size of a tight end, because it can feel like a lot of teams don't know exactly how to use a tweener like that. USC has figured out how to use Drake London, and he had that game-winning touchdown. He made plays. They had that tip touchdown catch against ASU. And to ASU's credit, they ran the hell out of the ball, both with the running backs and with Jaden Daniels, and they lose Frank Darby, their stud number one receiver, early, and it didn't seem to make an enormous difference. It was just a mistake-filled game, offense, defense, special teams. And for USC to score, what, two touchdowns in the final buck 40 of this game, including with the assistance of an onside kick, just absolutely dreadful onside kick coverage from ASU.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine what the, I saw one post-game win expectancy stat of like 99.99 for ASU.
Yeah.
It was a dual clunker. And so whoever was going to win this game was going to win their clunker. I can't believe USC pulled that out. I cannot believe down 27-13 late, they were just like, well, we'll see what happens. And they did it.
And the dying embers unbelievable. Of the game.
Yeah.
Keaton Slovis and some magic brings USC back. And like you said, we were interested in this game because of the early kickoff. It was the big noon game on Fox, but more like big 9 a.m. on the West Coast. Guys are getting up at 5 a.m. And it definitely seemed like it took at least a quarter for some of the kids to wake up here.
Yeah.
And it was sloppy. Yeah. This is why you take the points, frankly, in a game such as this. Let's talk about your Oregon Ducks. They win by three touchdowns, 35-14 over the Stanford Cardinal. It was fairly close at halftime, but Oregon pulled away in the third quarter. What was your general takeaway here, Dan? I know Oregon was, what, about an 11-point favorite?
Yeah.
Something like that going into this football game. So they were a double-digit favorite. They were expected to win, but it was obviously the first action we've seen of the Ducks this year. Are they, in your mind, the top dog, top duck, top whatever in the Pac-12 this season?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. It's an incomplete statement, though, because we haven't seen Cal or Washington or Utah or what USC is going to look like a little bit further down the road. But in terms of coming out the first week and establishing themselves as that, yeah, the offense with a new quarterback, new line, new coordinator, it took some time to warm up. And it certainly helps when the opposing offense is without their starting quarterback and stud receiver in Davis Mills and Cam Weddington. That was announced about an hour before the game. So Stanford had trouble, especially through the air consistently. They ran the ball pretty well. The line is a lot healthier than it was for much of last year. But Oregon, against a team that slows the ball down, slows down their drives in Stanford, and Oregon didn't generate turnovers. And so to score 35 on 9 possessions without any turnovers, without any short fields, with a new offense, which looked a good deal more creative. Tyler Shuck certainly made a couple of mistakes and a couple of really bad throws down the middle of the field, but Oregon looks to be throwing the ball downfield a lot more. Tyler Shuck seems to be pretty fearless. They're running Tyler Shuck more than they ever did. Justin Herbert, the running backs played well. They were down a couple of starters on both sides of the ball, and the guys that stepped in played magnificently. DJ Johnson, who was Miami transfer defensive end, he's now was the starting tight end for Oregon. He switched positions and he made some noise. So Oregon really just, it was a crockpotting, I guess, because they just stepped on the gas on the ground largely in the second half. But Oregon in a really nice place. As the game evolved, they looked a lot more comfortable in the offense, and schedule should be fine, all things considered, within the conference. Oregon is the favorite to repeat if they are going to keep growing like they did over the course of this game.
The other two games in the Pac-12, very quickly, we had Colorado, Dan.
Oh my
break
God,
up
what a
the
weird
Buffs.
Game.
Break them up. At one point, they're up 35-7. You and I were texting the eyes emojis to one another, like, what the hell is going on
here? I mean,
we
do that anyway. But
we do that anyway.
This time it was about this, yeah.
This was one that definitely caught us by surprise. UCLA gets one before half, then they go on a bit of a charge, very quickly pulling within one touchdown about midway through the third quarter. Back and forth from there on out, but ultimately Colorado is able to hold them off and get a win, Dan. This is a game I think, if memory serves, when we talked about it, we were like, yeah, we don't really think that highly of Colorado. UCLA has got some dudes. Maybe we should just lock them up. Neither one of us locked them up, but
no,
we felt a lot differently when we did the Wednesday preview show than obviously we do now.
Yeah, UCLA made a ton of mistakes. Four turnovers early on. They go down 35-7 in the first half. Yeah. Colorado, Sam Neuer, a reverse Tanner McAvoy. You won't get that reference anywhere else. He goes from safety to quarterback instead of the Tanner McAvoy direction at Wisconsin and is good. The story is really how Colorado was able to run the ball, spread it around a little bit. It was, I think, Broussard was the running back who stepped in. I'm verifying this right now. I think it's Jakari Broussard.
Big game.
And yeah, as UCLA goes, I suppose, like, what are you supposed to do if you're a UCLA fan where this is like, well, Colorado's winnable? No, it's not. DTR was fine, made plays, wasn't especially prolific down the field at quarterback for UCLA. But I mean, once again, UCLA defeats UCLA and Colorado's happy to take advantage. And I don't know what the rest of the Buff season looks like, but maybe we got it wrong. Maybe it was Colorado looking at UCLA and saying, well, this one's winnable.
And the final game in the Pac-12, we had Wazoo 38 on the road over Oregon State.
Yeah.
28, Dan. This is the,
by the way,
new era.
Jaden DeLora.
new era in Wazoo.
New Aaron Wazoo, I think it was McIntosh is the last name of the running back who trounced Oregon State. Deion McIntosh was so fun to watch. Bigger dude, runs hard. Jaden DeLora, true freshman from Hawaii, came in, does not have the biggest arm. This might be one of your new pop gun heroes, but is a playmaker, was impressive, had poise for a true freshman. Looking forward to, like, he definitely seems like a folk hero in the making for Wazoo.
Well,
I don't know why. He was fun to watch, and it's just a new era of Wazoo football. And Oregon State seemed fine. I like Jamar Jefferson. I don't think Tristan Jebbia gives them a hugely high ceiling. Happy to be wrong, but as long as Jonathan Smith is there, they're going to scheme themselves competitive in this conference.
Speaking of pop gun heroes, let's talk about Indiana 38, Michigan 21. Dan, now we had.
Oh, I thought you were going Sean Clifford. Continue.
Well, we'll get to Sean Clifford. We had a lengthy discussion on one of our episodes last week. They all run together at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. About who is the second best team in the Big Ten East. You were adamant that it was Michigan State.
No, I said it could be.
Adamant, Dan. You said you were going to tattoo it on your arm. You were very adamant about this.
Yeah. And Ronnie White tramp stamp.
That's right.
Ricky White. Yeah.
And I was pretty adamant about Indiana. Indiana wins this one, 38-21. Michael Penix.
Against Michigan, to be clear. Yeah.
Against Michigan. Thank you.
Yeah.
Michael Penix.
Play Michigan State.
Maybe the best lefty pop gun hero since Bryant Moniz himself.
What?
30.
I don't think.
Go. Okay, no, continue. You don't think so?
I don't think Penix has a pop gun arm.
Oh,
I think
come
he's
on.
Got, I think he's got more than pop.
No.
I don't
way.
Think he's got
Go
a up. Cannon. I don't
Pull
think
it
he's
up
got
on
a
YouTube.
Howitzer.
Pull it
I don't
up
think
on YouTube
he can
right
fully
now.
Fully spin it.
He definitely can't spin.
Touch tie.
A lot of touch on those throws. Okay. You're being very kind, but
okay.
He had himself a game, 30 of 50, 342. Sort of cruise to victory here, Dan. Like nothing all that dramatic about it. Michigan held to 3 of 11 on third downs, had a bunch of penalties, just 21 minutes of possession. Son Haskins ran for, 19 yards? He led the
Nothing.
Team. Like, we've seen enough, Dan. This is not going to be a great Michigan football team this season. Whenever they're trying to build the entire plane out of Joe Milton.
Hold on, Ty has his Michigan projection.
When they're trying to build the whole thing out of Joe Milton, the same way that Kurt Schiracca and Penn State are trying to build the whole thing out of Sean Clifford, apparently.
Right.
And in neither case is that going to yield positive results. Nonetheless, here we are with Indiana now. Indiana looking good, looking strong. They don't necessarily need to be this juggernaut to, I think, be far and away the second best team in the Big Ten East. Not going to beat Ohio State. They're going to fight them for maybe a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But second best in the Big Ten East, if you're Tom Allen, this is something you've been working for a long time, to beat a Michigan team, to beat a Penn State team in the same year. That's a hell of a season. I don't care if it's goofy. I don't care if there's a pandemic. I don't care what the circumstances are. This is not a common thing for Indiana football, and all due credit to them.
Absolutely all due credit. Indiana's a real team. They are a good team. They're a real team. I don't know what their ceiling is, but to come out and beat Michigan and Penn State, deeply flawed Michigan and Penn State teams, who cares?
Yeah.
A good team beats flawed teams and takes advantage of those flawed situations. And whether it was Michael Penix, whether it was, by the way, Wop Fillier and was it Ty? It was Whopper and Fry. It's Fry Fogle, I believe.
Yeah. Tough name to say, but yeah.
Whopper and Fries. I'm the last person to make that joke, but I'm proud to be in the group. He was sensational. The Michigan defense, I don't know where it went. And I know they're beat up. I know that they've lost a lot over the years, but they've recruited well. And the lack of pressure on Michael Penix, the secondary, just has always been populated by dudes. And it's just not. It is just not right now. And I'll do credit again to Indiana. And on offense, you're right about the Joe Milton thing. And good Joe Milton passes are great. Joe Milton's absolute ceiling, like his throws, like I know he had a couple of deeper touchdown passes. Those like 7.5 quarterbacks who can make those passes in college football. Like his ceiling is sensational. The problem is his floor is also like everything is holy schnit and in a good or bad way, because his interceptions were absolutely ugly, and on him, his fault, and absolutely changed the complexion of this game. I don't know what to think about Michigan beyond, I don't know if it's run its course. I don't know if that we're pouring dirt, we're shoveling dirt on this era of Michigan football, but it's not heading in a direction that makes sense.
When are we going to start hearing Harbaugh to the NFL rumors? Have they started yet?
3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago? When are we going to start hearing them? When's that drumbeat going to go and get a little bit louder? Because that's where this is headed.
It's going to get louder when they lose to another team that they are vastly more talented than.
Yep.
And they discover that, oh, this interesting name is interested in the Michigan job.
I think there is a real risk of making a move like any kind of drastic coaching change.
Oh, they shouldn't get rid of Jim Harbaugh. Definitely
in this
not.
Era of the pandemic. Now, if Harbaugh wants to go elsewhere, that's a separate thing. But I know I've read things about like, oh, maybe they should get rid of Harbaugh. Maybe they should get rid of James Franklin. And I think the risk of doing it this year, where there is really just such a slim margin for caring and not caring, given circumstances, you know, guys opting out and just circumstances being weird. Everyone gets another year of eligibility if they want it. Like, there's just a bunch of competing factors. This is anything but a normal year. And I have a hard time.
I still think people are going to take the fall. I think assistants, coordinators, and position, I think they're going to take undue falls probably. Yeah. Or in some cases, due falls. But I think that's what we're going to see.
Well, we talk about Indiana. Congratulations to them. Big win. Your second team in the Big Ten East was Michigan State. They were down 35-0 at half.
It happens. Ty, it happens.
At half. Now, I told you, I warned you in advance that Vegas was kind of like, you're speaking to us, you know? 6.5 was the line here. It didn't feel right. It felt like too much, especially after what we saw the previous week from Michigan State.
Yeah.
Whoo, buddy. 35. I didn't know Iowa had it in them.
I should know better. A letdown spot in Iowa City. That is on me, Ty. That is, no matter how disappointing Iowa might look during a season, if you're coming off of a rivalry win, an unexpected rivalry win, and you're traveling to Iowa City, mark me down for, you know, just rolling with the Hawkeyes no matter what.
49-7, Michigan State loses this game.
This is more of a commentary on the Michigan Wolverines probably than anything in the end. And by the way, Iowa played creatively. They ran out of the shotgun. They had jet sweep action. They made plays downfield. They did a lot of play action. Spencer Petras was fine. He was above average at times. Iowa was creative. And yes, it's Michigan State, another deeply flawed Big Ten team, but this is what decent teams do.
Finally, speaking of decent teams, I don't know if we have one in this matchup between Maryland and Penn State, but I'm more likely to say it's Maryland than Penn State, Dan.
Yeah.
Oh boy. 35-7 after three quarters in favor of the Terrapins. Did we jinx Kirk Sciarocco with this?
Kirk Sciarocco.
Should we just retire the sound and see if we could pawn off that domain to his family?
I think we're going to have to take a break. We're going to have to take a Sciarocco sabbatical. I'm very dumb.
I cannot believe that the game plan here was to have Sean Clifford throw the ball 57 times.
Can't imagine.
There is no way they came into this game thinking, you know, we're going to surprise him. Why don't we throw it 57 times with Sean Clifford?
Yeah.
Not the best approach. Clearly, that was not the game plan. Maybe Maryland's the second best team in the East. I don't know, but Talia Tungavailoa looked pretty good in this game. Two consecutive games now where he looked really strong, 282 and three touchdowns. Again, a veritable tire fire here in the Big Ten East. I think it's probably Indiana at this point. I don't know who's next, frankly.
I enjoyed the payoff of Mike Locksley knows the DMV when he pulled Rakim Jarrett, the five-star receiver, not a huge dude, kind of slight, and pulled him to Maryland over major, major programs across the country. And Maryland's game plan against Penn State was, we should get it to this fast, unstoppable dude, maybe, in space. And they got it to Rakim Jarrett, and he was uncatchable and was fantastic, as was Dante Demas. And Maryland has had recent good receiving duos, but now it appears Talia Tungavailoa is not a converted linebacker trying to throw to them, or Tyrell Pigrum, or Kasim Hill, any of these guys who would flash. Now, Talia Tungavailoa, maybe this early part of the season, is the flash, but it's ongoing. And so he's been impressive. He finds the open dudes. He throws with confidence, especially after that ugly, ugly loss to Northwestern to open up the season. Good year to be interesting in the Big Ten, because not a ton of teams are. Fear that turtle.
Elsewhere in the Big Ten, to round things out, we had Ohio State really big over Rutgers. They were up 35-3 at half. We had Minnesota 41-14 over Illinois. And we had Northwestern. Your Northwestern Wildcats, Dan.
Undefeated.
21-13.
Yeah.
Over Nebraska. Any thoughts there?
Northwestern looks like the Northwestern of old, which is a good thing. Bend but don't break. Smother Nebraska a little bit, and on offense, do just enough. Take some chances occasionally, which Northwestern was able to do. And Peyton Ramsey wasn't amazing, but he was fine. Yeah. And fine as compared to what Northwestern looked like at quarterback last year is light years. Is light years a time, a distance thing? Whatever it is, light years in the correct direction.
It's the distance that light travels in 1 year.
Okay. I think it applies. If there's an astrophysicist at Northwestern who wants to correct me, that's cool.
Moving on over to the Big 12.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, Oklahoma State 20, K-State 18. Do you have a drive chart you'd like to read for this? Is this a game?
I can pull it up. Do you want me to?
I think you should, because...
All right, talk about it as I pull it up.
This was just an ugly offensive game. There were a million punts. They're playing for field position. Oklahoma State without Tylan Wallace, and to some extent without Chuba Hubbard. He was slowed down a bit by an injury. The Pokes trailed 12-0 at half. Took them until the waning seconds of the third quarter to kick a field goal to go up on top 13-12. They eventually tack on a touchdown midway through the fourth to get it to 20-12. But K-State scores a late touchdown. They go for two to tie it up. They do not convert. That's how you get a weird 20-18 final score. But the takeaway for me here, Dan, is I have spent, what is it now? November? I've spent 3 to 4 months talking up Spencer Sanders. Talking up what this offense can do if they've got the three-headed monster available of Spencer Sanders, Tylan Wallace, and Chuba Hubbard. Now, that wasn't a thing in this game, right? Like, some of those guys were out. But Spencer Sanders threw for 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
100 yards.
Yep.
apparently it is on me. Apparently it is on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the only one, but I put a little bit too much faith in this thing. Oklahoma State's still going to be very good. They've got a solid defense. That's going to take them places in the Big 12. Whether or not they win the conference, I think, depends somewhat on can they get more out of that offense. But that aside, I came away from this game wholeheartedly unimpressed by Oklahoma State. And that is not meant to take anything away from K-State, because this is the game that K-State wanted to play against Oklahoma State. They wanted to dirty it up. They wanted it to be a battle of field position and time of possession and see if they can get a break to go their way. And they led for a good chunk of this game. This is exactly the kind of game they needed to play in order to win this football game, knowing their own deficiencies. But it's, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Oklahoma State people who listen to this show, I was wholeheartedly unimpressed by what we saw out there yesterday, because not only was Oklahoma State my lock, like your lock, we both felt pretty confident about them in this game. I'm over that part of it. I constantly want to see more from this team, and we've just only seen it in a few select spots so far this season.
Yeah. I mean, win your clunkers. Absolutely win your clunkers, because K-State probably isn't scoring 27 points on offense as it's led by Will Howard, at least right now, as green as he is.
But the thing about the clunkers, though.
Yes.
Everybody has them. Everybody has them. They're inevitable. But you reach a certain point where it feels like you're sort of creating your own clunkers, right? You're shooting yourself in the foot to some extent, and you're putting it, you're making it much harder for yourself to move forward. And we
story
are in that,
of my life, Ty.
Yeah, right. That is where Oklahoma State's at this point. Yeah. And it's damn frustrating.
Yeah. No, they're probably going to end up wasting a very strong defense. And you hate to see it. I think Bedlam next week, or is there a bye week before Bedlam? I think there's a bye week before Bedlam. And that's going to go a long way as to determine, you know, the top of the Big 12, because with Iowa State coming back and winning, if Oklahoma State goes down to Oklahoma, Iowa State with their tiebreaker over the Sooners is in like real clean control of the conference once again, because they don't have the breaker against Oklahoma State. So all sorts of implications. So I suppose good for Oklahoma State for pushing it forward another week. But you're right that the expectation of that offense based on those glimpses of Spencer Sanders, who had a flawed first year as a starting quarterback, I don't think were unreasonable given what they returned, which you mentioned. But it does also feel like the, I had a birdie on this par three because I put it 8 feet from the pin. I should be doing this all the time. And you just don't. You just don't. The expectation is a little bit too high considering last year's inconsistency and this year's inconsistency. Injuries, context, all of that, of course, included.
All right. You know what? Save the drive chart. We've got another one here that we can do it for.
I'm ready with the Dvorak, and I have an iPhone 12 now. So
great. Okay.
The audio sound coming out is going to be robust.
We've got another one here that we can do this one with, but it's coming up in a little bit.
Okay.
Elsewhere in the Big 12, we had Texas. Good showing by their defense, 17-13 over West Virginia. A lot to like with what we've seen from the defense over the last 2 weeks. The defense now, because that was, at least in the early going, a real open question for Texas, right? They're bringing Chris Ash. They got to get better at tackling. Didn't look like they had gotten better at tackling for a while, but this is a good showing by the defense. If you take anything away from this win over West Virginia, 17-13 is a close game, any way you slice it. But the defense definitely has looked better the last 2 weeks. And Bijan Robinson, I think after all of this hand-wringing over what is the Texas rushing attack going to look like now? Like who's it going to, is it Keyonte Ingram? Who can we trust? Maybe it's Bijan Robinson. He had a really good game here.
Yeah.
12 carries, 113 yards. I think if he's more of a focal point, if we take anything away from this game, that would be really good output for the Longhorns.
Had the really impressive longer run, had the great sort of spin and stiff arm run. I don't know if you saw that down the left side.
Yep.
Unfortunately, for anybody watching this game, it was a game decided like 4 yards at a time otherwise. Sam Ehlinger made a couple plays, but he has his own accuracy issues. Jarrett Daigie made plays, but it was a lot of nickel and diming stuff. And Texas wisely said, we're just not going to let West Virginia beat us on the ground. If Jarrett Daigie can beat us, you know, hats off to Jarrett Daigie. And he was not able to, as close as it was. And I think the focus should be on Texas's defense, how well they were able to get to him, how well they performed. It was a thorough performance, aside from Texas with the ball without Bijan Robinson, and Texas without Keontae Ingram, and they're still able to roll on the ground. It was sort of down game. West Virginia coming off of their impressive win against Kansas State, Texas coming off of that emotional win over Oklahoma State. So it was bound to be a little bit lackluster and dusty, but I suppose good for Texas. I don't feel better about either one of these teams in any sort of meaningful way, but you know, except for Texas on defense, now becomes a little bit more interesting in that step forward.
The other action in the Big 12, we had Iowa State 38, Baylor 31. There were 6 turnovers in this game, 4 by Iowa State.
Yeah, Iowa State in a losing effort wins this game.
Breece Hall, another one. Very good again, 133, 2 touchdowns. Brock Purdy, not his best effort, but they win the game, 38-31. Oklahoma big over Kansas, 62-9. And yep. TCU 34-18 over Texas Tech. Any thoughts on those three?
Strange TCU Texas Tech game. Max Duggan couldn't throw, but he could run. Really ugly first half for Iowa State, but good for Baylor, I suppose, for taking advantage early. But the Baylor offense is still pretty fatally flawed, and Iowa State able to pull it out in the end. Did you mention anything else? Did you say Oklahoma Kansas, or was that earlier?
No, I said 62-9. Oklahoma over Kansas, and TCU 34 to 18, excuse me, over Texas Tech.
Yeah, I don't have too many thoughts. Spencer Rattler left this game, right, at a certain point. I don't know what his health status is. I think he's okay. I think I would have heard otherwise. But once again, it's Kansas, but good for Oklahoma for keeping the momentum on the ground going, because ultimately that's going to decide their ceiling this year and beyond, I still think.
All right. And moving on to the ACC.
ACC had a day.
Liberty 38, Virginia Tech 35.
You see the end of this game?
What a dagger. So if you didn't watch it, the game's tied 35-35. Liberty's lined up for a game-winning 51-yard field goal. What do you do, Dan? If you're Justin Fuente or any coach, what do you do?
Fuente.
Opponent lining up, big kick on the way. You've got a timeout to burn. What do you do? Do you burn the timeout?
I'm not big on icing, no.
Some are, some aren't. Some like to do it early, some like to do it late.
Equally lets them gather themselves and calm themselves, the kickers.
Virginia Tech decides they're going to do the late timeout. Really try and get in the kid's head. They block the kick.
They do indeed.
Block the kick. Seemingly unaware of the fact that there was a timeout that's been called.
Mm-hmm.
Play the game. Block the kick. Run it back for an apparent game-winning touchdown. Everyone's going crazy. Only to find out that the timeout had been called prior to the snap. So naturally, Liberty gets another bite at the apple. They drill the kick. 1 second left. They end up winning the game 38-35. The only other interesting anecdote here is that both quarterbacks finished with exactly 217 passing yards and 3 touchdowns. But, you know, Liberty was ranked going into this game. They were ranked team.
Yeah, undefeated, yeah.
They were ranked team. I think we both took points here. Don't know if either of us felt particularly strongly about Virginia Tech, but wow, what a way to lose, huh?
Not ideal. Well, they lost in more ways than just that single play. What was the spread? Was double digits-ish, something like that, for Virginia Tech as a favorite?
I'll go back and check.
To give up what they gave up, specifically to Malik Willis, and they lose Khalil Herbert, I believe, on the opening kickoff, so he didn't play, essentially, in this game. Virginia Tech was still able to run the ball well, albeit with Hendon Hooker. Not a running back really contributing to this game in a meaningful way.
15 and a half, by the way, was the line.
15 and a half. Okay. Yeah. So I believe Liberty covered.
Yes.
Believe Liberty covered. Virginia Tech has a ways to go on defense. Virginia Tech still, and it's very strange to say this, but this is a new era of Hokie football. They did everything that they should have done, essentially. I mean, there were mistakes made on offense, but you score 35, you should have a decent chance of winning a game against Liberty. When you have that sort of talent advantage and you have Hendon Hooker, who is, you know, I think largely a very, very good quarterback, both in the conference and nationally. I still am a big believer in him. That defense needs, it needs dudes. It needs probably, it needs to get like 25 to 40% better for Virginia Tech to be truly dangerous against anybody.
Elsewhere in the ACC, Miami 44, NC State 41, Dan. Wow. Back and forth game. Mm-hmm. Miami was down 10 early in the fourth quarter. They score 13 unanswered to win this one late on a 54-yard strike to Mike Hartley. Five touchdown passes, 430 passing yards.
He's so good, Derek.
Derek King. He also led the team with 105 rushing yards. Not a great defensive effort for the Canes. That was supposed to be their bread and butter. Not a great show.
Those edge rushers are good, though. Quincy Roche and Jalen Phillips had great days.
Very good. They're very good. But the defense did not necessarily show up here, especially against a backup quarterback, since Devin Leary's been hurt. And Derek King,
man.
Derek King gets the job done. This is why they brought him over. He is a unique talent who can do a lot, and this game did. And he's single-handedly what propelled Miami to victory here.
I really hope that the microphone just picked up my stomach growling. I don't know if it was timed with Miami NC State right there, but I just got a brrr.
You're hungry for more of that Miami defense.
Derek King dragged Miami across the finish line. No. And it's actually really refreshing to see, because one of the things we talked about earlier in the year with the Canes is there a receiver? Is there like a guy? Is there a dude for Miami? And Mike Hartley has sort of really shown up for the Canes. So that's a nice revelation. Also, Miami, though, they were able to run the ball really impressively early on, and that has vanished for the Canes. So I don't know who is left on Miami's schedule. They're 6-1. They had the ugly loss against Clemson where they were thoroughly outclassed, but it's a flawed Virginia Tech team, a definitely flawed Georgia Tech team, an interesting Wake team, but not a crazy good Wake team, and North Carolina. So with a playmaker like Derek King, they're going to be in basically any game they play short of Clemson now in the ACC. So they could go 4-0, they could go 2-2, they go 3-1. Essentially, everything is on the table with Derek King in a good way and with most of the rest of Miami in a not so good way.
North Carolina 56, Duke 24. They led 42-10 at half. Another big game on the ground for Javonte Hawkins. He had 151 and three touchdowns. Michael Carter, another name who we've discussed on the podcast, 85 yards and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. North Carolina is gearing up for a game end of the month against Notre Dame. So
yes.
Notre Dame's got Boston College. After Boston College, their next game would be against North Carolina. That will be a pivotal matchup for both of those schools. No doubt that is going to be a difficult game for Notre Dame. I would
agree.
I would write that to I would put that in a time capsule and dig it up like 10 years from now. That's how confident I am, because North Carolina is very dynamic on offense. The defense has improved, albeit maybe not as much as it needs to. And you know they will be fired up to play against Notre Dame, who at that point, barring any kind of catastrophe against Boston College, should still be undefeated. And look, atop the ACC.
Here's my question to you. So we're in the middle of year two of the Mack Brown era at North Carolina. What's the signature win? Is it losing to Clemson? Is it beating Miami last year? What is the actual signature win for North Carolina? Because I feel like he has raised their floor significantly, but their performance when eyes are actually on them has typically disappointed.
The signature game is probably the close call against Clemson. And
That's my issue in just North Carolina belief right now.
Right. Well, the win might be
where's
finding...
the four quarters of impressive play against a pretty good team?
I would reframe that conversation, and I would say the real win is finding Sam Howell. That's the win. The
win stealing is, Sam Howell. Yeah.
Stealing Sam Howell. Right. The win is getting Sam Howell to a level where he constantly is going to have you in some of these games. And, okay. You know, they need to build depth on defense is what they need to do. I think they're doing a good job of it. It's going to take a little bit to get there.
Yeah.
But as we often see with a lot of these schools, it's not always something that translates to wins right away. You do mm-hmm. look for that fight, though. As long as they're playing hard, I think that tells you a lot about buy-in, that tells you a lot about where the program's at internally. So I feel good about it, even if we haven't necessarily gotten that signature moment yet.
That's Friday night of Thanksgiving week. Friday, I don't know if it's a night or day. I don't know if it's been announced, against Notre Dame, right?
The 27th.
The 27th, yeah. And then the following week against Miami on the road. I'm not, like, I don't think it's going to change my opinion of North Carolina if they lose close to Notre Dame, because that sort of seems on brand. Miami on the road is going to be tough, but that is the surefire sign of progress. Miami's a beatable team, even yeah. in Miami, because it's not all that difficult, because 2020 to win on the road. So North Carolina has to beat Miami as proof of concept of we are flirting with the upper tier of the ACC. Otherwise, I think they're still kind of mired in the fancy June pick, but not actual October proof kind of team.
Okay.
I want to see more. With eyes on the heels, I want to see more.
We had Louisville, Virginia postponed.
Louisville, yeah.
We had Pitt up big over Florida State. Florida State actually led at half. And then Pitt outscored him 31-3.
Pitt ran the ball, Ty. Breaking news.
Pitt ran the ball. We also saw some Chuba Purdy in this game for Florida State. Wasn't maybe the best version of Chuba Purdy, but we did get to see some action for him. And if we want to load up the Dvorak, we did have Boston College 16.
Oh, hold on. Let me get you.
Syracuse 13. This game was as bad, if not worse, offensively.
Punt, 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 field goal, missed field goal, punt, 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 touchdown, end of half, missed field goal, punt, punt, interception, punt, fumble, field goal, and hey, touchdown.
16-13.
Did that sound noticeably better? The Dvorak, from my speaker from the iPhone 12?
It always breaks up for me on this end when I hear it. I can hear it after the fact, usually pretty well. Just not now.
Same for me with some of the sounds you play.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. And let's close it out with the SEC. We only had three games to discuss.
By the way, I am not closing out with the SEC because I got a lot of group of five thoughts. Continue.
Well, I have the group of five stuff here as well, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Arkansas 24, Tennessee 13. The story of two halves, really. Tennessee led 13-0 in the first half. The Hogs score 24 unanswered in the second half to win this one, 24-13. Look, they're now 3-3. They're on the road next week at Florida. I don't know if we can steer into the whole Felipe Franks revenge game
of the week.
Florida coming off that Georgia win, so maybe there is a letdown spot there. But this is a game where Arkansas was favored, I think, by a point and a half, something like that.
Is that where it ended up? Okay.
Yeah, somewhere around there. At least when we recorded, that's where it was.
Okay.
So I guess it's not surprising that Arkansas won, but this is beyond the point of just being a fluke, right? Like this is Sam Pittman knowing how to get the most out of his talent. This is Felipe Franks actually having very quietly a pretty good season.
Good season, yeah.
If you're an Arkansas fan, I think this is your source of optimism now moving forward. Like this is, we finally got a guy who is getting players to buy in. Arkansas's, look at the rest of the schedule. It's tough the rest of the way. Probably at least one, maybe two wins if you're lucky. But in any case, to be talking about a 4 or 5 win potentially campaign in year one in a goofy year under Sam Pittman, that is such a quantum leap forward given where this program has been the last couple seasons that you got to be elated. You have to be elated.
Yes, especially because they should have there should be 4-2. With the Auburn game ending. So
that's right.
They should have an even better record. The question to me, though, is what's waiting behind Felipe Franks? Mm. I don't know the Hogs depth chart at quarterback.
No.
But you got to be able to develop your own dude there. Because Felipe Franks is essentially a finished product that was able to step in. And Treylon Burks has been fantastic. There have been all sorts of pieces on both sides of the ball that the Arkansas coaching staff has really gotten the most out of. But this is not Sam Pittman's squad right now. And so that's what I'm curious about, because how can they build on this suddenly competitive Hog squad? Because against LSU's defense and Mizzou, both two teams that have very clear flaws with guys out and whatever, those are winnable games for Arkansas. I've already planted my flag as to saying huge trap spot against Alabama ahead of the SEC championship game, but I'm not that confident in that win. But LSU and Mizzou, suddenly, very approachable tie, very accessible teams this year for the Hogs. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, it should be mentioned, Jarrett Garantano was hurt.
He was
and
hurt.
Tennessee really struggled at quarterback. He took a shot in this game that took him out of the game. And Tennessee, it shouldn't be this difficult at this point, right?
I know.
It shouldn't.
I know.
I don't know if it's a Jim Chaney thing. The third downs have been awful for the Vols all season long. Everything just seems difficult, and it shouldn't at this point be all that hard to consistently move the ball against a very, very much changing Arkansas team. Improving,
that's for sure.
Tennessee, it's a disappointment, all things considered, 2020, where the Vols haven't at least gotten to as a team.
Final two games here to talk about very quickly in the SEC before we rattle off the group of five action. Texas A&M destroys South Carolina 48-3.
Shock of the week.
And Mississippi State 24-17 over Vandy Dan.
All right, I'm not going to waste my breath on Mississippi State Vandy, but
talk about, hold on. Let's move on here. I want to talk about a different game.
Let's talk about Texas A&M though.
Texas A&M's been overlooked. They were left for dead after they lost that game to Alabama. Unfairly
I don't know
so.
If that's true.
Unfairly
I don't know
so.
If that's true.
People have been sleeping on A&M. They've been sleeping on A&M. Perhaps they shouldn't, because A&M's actually really good.
Yeah.
They showed it in this game, a really good showing, frankly. And how the rest of the season plays out is supremely interesting to me, because I think highly of this team. I did at the start of the year. And sure, there are still some ups and downs, but this is a really solid football team that, for whatever reason, to me, at least from where I sit, feels like it's gotten lost in the shuffle.
Am I misremembering, or did I take A&M against Florida and you just interrogate me?
I can neither confirm nor deny any such statement, Dan.
I have been an A&M believer all year long. I have not been an enthusiastic Kellen Mond believer, and I think he has proven me wrong to a certain extent, and Isaiah Spiller has certainly been better than I thought he would, and the receivers have stepped up better than I thought they would, even despite some injuries and opt-outs. But what A&M looks like on the offensive line and defensive line, they've got some big dudes on the inside of that A&M defensive line that have been quite impressive, and they are, to me, A&M, when you look across various conferences, I know you've shouted out Indiana, and obviously Notre Dame has taken a step forward, but in terms of teams that have surprisingly gotten things together, and now it's a much more advantageous schedule this year than it was last year, A&M, in a very strange year, has become fully realized, and we shouldn't overlook that. That's crazy impressive.
All right. Let's go to the group of five action. The big group of five game, I've got a bunch here listed, but the big one was clearly on Friday night between BYU and Boise State.
Yeah.
This is just a beatdown. This is a beatdown, Dan. I sincerely hope at this point, and I know schedules are wonky because of COVID, I sincerely hope that BYU draws somebody prominent in a bowl game, just so we can see what they'll do against a team from one of the Power Five conferences. Someone in the SEC. Give them A&M. I don't care. Right now.
Interesting.
Are they the second best team in the Big Ten if you put them there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are they the
well, okay.
Fifth
Here's the
best
qualifier.
Team in the SEC? Like, they're really, really good.
Zach Wilson is a high-level Power 5 quarterback. I mean, I've seen first-round conversations about him with regard to the NFL draft. They faced a Boise team who lost their now second-string quarterback pretty early on in the game, right? Jack Sears leaves this game injured, and Boise could do precisely zero through the passing game thereafter. So that's a slight qualifier, but Boise State's defense doesn't try to throw the ball, and they could not stop Zach Wilson throwing the ball. Zach Wilson is legitimate. I am very excited to see him against the rest of their schedule and hopefully a good team. They have San Diego State, but a San Diego State team who is, I don't think they are where they were under Rocky Long now that's Brady Hoke. And I think that San Diego State just lose to San Jose State last night to their backup quarterback. And that's a story. I've loved the Spartans for a while. And I think it's Brent Brennan, their head coach. But I don't know who's standing in BYU's way at this point. So, yes, a fantastic story. Boise State, when you're down to your third, fourth, fifth string quarterback, it's not going to work out well, no matter how dark your uniforms happen to be.
No matter how dark they are. But it's like the thing with BYU, though, is they're not just squeaking by.
No, they're bringing monsoons in the second half, by the way. They're getting stronger as games go on.
They are maiming teams in the second half. And again, yeah. Look, I don't know how that translates to a game against, I'll just throw A&M out there, right? I have no idea. But I would be damn curious to see it because they have been really, really solid pretty much the whole year through with like one hiccup.
Yeah, maybe that's our segment after after we sign off to the regular listeners and we talk to directly to the certified and premium verballers is who could BYU beat? Who could BYU beat? It's a very specific segment. I think it's a relevant question for Cincinnati, though. A comfortable win against Houston.
Yeah.
Your guy Desmond Ridder with four touchdowns. Not crazy impressive through the air, but fine and really good on the ground. Who is definitively better than Cincinnati right now across any conference? Alabama.
Definitively? Okay.
Alabama, I would take confidently. Ohio State, I would take confidently against Cincinnati.
Okay.
I would take Clemson with Trevor Lawrence, although maybe Clemson straight up. I would take Notre Dame against Cincinnati at this point. I think Desmond Ridder would full-on struggle with Notre Dame's defense. But right now, with that combination of running the ball and defense, and where Cincinnati now is many years into Luke Fickell's tenure, I don't know that I'm taking Georgia over Cincinnati.
What?
I don't know that I am. No. I am confident, but it's not a no-brainer to me.
Let me tell you what I enjoy here. I think
I would take Texas A&M over Cincinnati.
I enjoy sitting on this side of the microphone, just listening. Yeah. Listening to your thought process work itself out naturally.
Oklahoma State? Would you take Oklahoma State over Cincinnati comfortably?
Oh, man, I wouldn't take Oklahoma State over anybody right now.
Right. I don't know that I would take Oregon
neutral,
over Cincinnati.
Neutral field, Oklahoma State is a point underdog to Cincinnati based on what I'm seeing here.
Okay.
So the answer
I would take Florida over Cincinnati.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm that high in Cincinnati, but my point is that I've been here for a while feeling that this is a really good team.
I know.
And I know Des Ritter's got some limitations, right? He's not always the most thrifty with the football, but he's a dynamic talent. He's getting it done both through the air and on the ground. And you're right. It's not a sure thing that you're going to go and knock off Cincinnati because they do play really good defense and they have multiple ways they can beat you on offense.
Yeah, they've been sloppy. The USF game was not great, but right now they're playing at a pretty impressive level. The Mac is back, Ty, and I know what you're thinking. That must be the end of the Rourke lineage for the Ohio Bobcats. Wrong. Curtis Rourke. They just
another
go from one to another.
There
younger
is another.
Brother. Yeah, but they lose to the Chips, 30-27. The Bauer Hour, in a losing effort. They lost to Northern Illinois, lost to Buffalo. Yeah, that's what it is. Miami of Ohio, a nice win over Ball State. Toledo, interesting story with Toledo, Ty. They hire a bunch of new assistants, new coordinator situation. They absolutely looked fantastic because they had it down 2019. They look really good against BG against Bowling Green. So great to have Maction back in our lives. Western Michigan demolished Akron, but Akron's been pretty bad. Are there any other group of five games that were interesting? I mean, Utah State got destroyed by Nevada, and Carson Strong, very quietly, an interesting quarterback nationally for Nevada. But Utah State was like, yeah, I think we're done with Gary Anderson. I think the Gary Anderson experiment has run its course at Gary Anderson part two.
I mean,
mentioned the San Jose State win. Continue.
No, I was going to say, I have a few other ones here that I'll just rifle through. So Cincy knocked off Houston by 28.
Yep.
SMU knocks off Temple. Four more touchdowns for our boy Sugar Shane Bichelle.
Yep.
Coastal Carolina wins by 17 over South Alabama. They've got App State in 2 weeks, which should be a pretty big game. App State knocked off Texas State by a 38-17 final. And then we also had Marshall pretty big over UMass, rounding out top 25 teams. And in the MAC, you started to address some of the action there, but we had K-State, Western Michigan, Buffalo, Central Michigan, Miami, Ohio, and Toledo also winning their action.
Should mention Siobhan Cordero for Hawaii, another huge game and a winning effort over New Mexico. Also, Ty, I mentioned, what's it called? I mentioned San Jose State, but Fresno State, Kalen DeBoer. They take down UNLV, Marcus Arroyo and UNLV. I think that's a ways to go situation for the Rebels. But Fresno's, I like that combination. I like Jake Haener, who many thought had beaten out Jacob Eason last year in the quarterback battle at Washington. And Jake Haener was like, screw this. If they're not putting me in, I'm just going. I'm just leaving. And so he's been pretty solid at Fresno State. Something to monitor in the Mountain West.
All right. That's what I got here. Do we have any dudes that you would like to call out, Daniel?
I would love to. Drop me that sound.
Who we got?
I don't know who to select from Notre Dame. I'm just going to go with Ian Book. Kyron Williams was sensational. The defense was great. I'm going to go with Ian Book.
Got to go Ian Book. Yeah.
He was the engine there. Rakim Jarrett, I mentioned, from Maryland. Drake London, USC. Ty Freifogel. I love fries. I love ties. Let's put him together with Indiana football and make him a dude. Jarek Broussard, Colorado, did a fantastic job for the Buffs. De'Aaron King. Everything.
Huge
everything
dude.
For we, that Miami offense.
I feel like we've retired him as a dude.
I think we probably should if we
should, right?
Yet. Hendon Hooker doing the same thing, though, in a losing effort. Deion McIntosh. I'm skewing Pac-12 with this week's dudes just because they've been gone for so long for Wazoo.
Cool.
Torrey Taylor. Impressive punting day for Iowa in a winning effort. Tip o' the cap. Somebody submitted him. I watched his punts. Dude can kick.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you to everyone out there for playing along with our madness here, for calling in at 408-VERBAL-1, giving us your thoughts and feelings throughout the course of this week 10.
Mm-hmm.
We will be back on Wednesday to preview all of the week 11 action. In the interim, don't forget to check out verballers.com for more info on the Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like more of an in-depth analysis of how it sounded to listen to some of these local broadcasts, please do go on out to TuneIn and search for College Sports Now, or just look up the College Football Rewind from our good friends over at Learfield IMG College. They do an awesome job running you through all of the top 25 action and bring you up to speed in a way that we can't, frankly.
Correct.
So go and check them out. Our friends do an awesome job, Dan.
Local flair.
That's all I got.
That's all I have as well. Yeah.
Appreciate you being here with me early on this Sunday morning to record this show. Again, going out to our website, solidverbal.com, and subscribe if you have not already. For that guy over there, beautiful Chicago, for myself, Ty, over here in eastern Pennsylvania, we will talk to y'all on Wednesday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.